And I think you should do it from memory.
Okay.
Okay. Hello. Welcome to Adopt Materials.
Okay, I can do it.
Hello. Welcome to Adopt Materials. I'm Faye.
Hi.
And I'm Rachel. Hello.
This is a podcast where we're reading through and discussing Philip Pullman's His Adopt Materials novels, a chapter at a time, spoiler free.
In this episode, we are discussing chapter 38 of The Amber Spyglass. The Botanic Garden.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, and we did that from memory, and it was kind of hard.
You do the outro from memory even harder.
Yeah, I feel, obviously we managed it, but I feel because I've always had it in front of me, I don't retain that information because I don't need to. So you're just like, okay. But I guess things do stick in your brain.
Yeah, this is it. Mm-hmm. The final chapter.
Yeah.
The final
book of the trilogy, which is wild to think. We've been talking about it a lot in the sense of where we started and where we are, and we're in the same room recording, chapter of Northern Lights.
Yeah, we decided to finish it out like we started it in the good old days with the Yeti mic that we bought on eBay.
Mm-hmm. And just, different location, but same vibes.
Yeah, we started this podcast in 2019, when we both lived in Peckham in London, and I used to get the bus over to Faye's flat, and we'd record, and then usually she'd feed me dinner. It was very nice.
Yeah.
And now we both live in the north of England, because London was a lot.
Yeah.
And both of our lives have completely changed in the last, oh my God, it's 2024.
It's just over 4 years, isn't it? Yeah. Like 4.5 years nearly.
Yeah.
But isn't it wild how... I always think when I get like really nostalgic about stuff, it's so wild how your life, or like our lives, can change so drastically so many times over these last 4 years. And yet we're still here doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's because I always think that when you're in the throes of major life changes, you think that like literally everything in your life is going to change and you're going to be lost and alone and all this kind of stuff. But although you might be going through the most traumatic thing ever, there's still things that stay the same. And this podcast was one of them for both of us when we went through a lot of shit over the last 4 years.
Exactly. I mean, this podcast has been a constant for us. And I feel like the books have been a constant for a lot of our listeners, which I guess is why they're so important.
Yeah.
And then we can all get a cry now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was hoping I'd have something like really profound to say about the end, but it just feels so strange. I think I'm one of those people that when the end is happening, it doesn't feel like a momentous occasion. It's like a few weeks afterwards or like a month down the line that I'm like, oh my God, that ended.
Do you know what I mean?
We did the whole trilogy because obviously we'll be back for like Lantern Slides and Wrap Up and Mailbag, and we're going to do the novellas. Mm-hmm. So we're not gone. But we're done. We'll never do this again, these three books.
No.
It's wild.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And think about how far we've come. Like, look, this whole thing, I'm just going to have a nostalgia moment. It's fine. But yeah, we started this 2019 in your little flat. We didn't know when we started talking about these books, when Faye sent me the fabled text of lore that said, I feel like we should start a podcast together. How do you feel about His Dark Materials? Because I've just read it on your recommendation. Mm-hmm. We didn't know that we were going to end up like at the premiere of the season 3 thing at the BFI. We didn't know we were going to talk to like Lin-Manuel Miranda and like Simone Kirby and Daphne Keane and all of these like amazing people that have like written and produced and acted in the TV series. We didn't know any of that stuff. We were just like, la la la, let's talk about a book in your living room.
Yeah. And we didn't think that we'd like have friends, like listeners and, you know, people that we've interviewed alike that we can now call our friends. We didn't even think anyone would listen because we were just like, let's talk about it until like it stops being fun because like probably many people won't listen. And then it blew up into this big thing that people listen to, which is wild. I know that sounds weird because like you start a podcast for people to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for us, we just wanted to do something creative And we were just like, if no one listens to it, we'll just continue to do it as long as we enjoy it, which has always been our thing, which is why we've like burnt out a lot and stuff over the years, because we were like, well, if it stops being fun, then we won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it never stopped being fun. It just became too much work, I think, is what happened.
We've taken breaks in order to keep it being fun.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best thing we could have done, because it's always fun chatting with you, but every so often editing feels like homework. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Because we're grown ups and we understand that sometimes homework happens.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that I don't want to get like emotional, but what they're doing this, because we're both creative people, and I know especially for you, like your job, your actual job is very creative. But I'm a writer, so I've never in my actual job. My job's never been that creative. It's been based on writing, but it's never been creative writing. So I've always, like, for ages, like, wanted to do something creative. And I think that, like, with podcasting, I really found my passion. And it's just wild to think. This is one of the best things I've ever done in my life, and I'll remember it forever. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I'll never forget about it. I'll never, like, forget how much it's taught both of us. How much we've done, how much we've achieved, because I think we're both people that don't think about that as often as we should.
I still, if someone says, like, if you're like, there is the millennial at the core of me that knows that I live an existence that is probably quite cringe. Cringe at myself when I say the words, oh, I do a podcast, nothing is cringier than someone that does a podcast. But then you go, no. But we talk about these amazing books that we love, that so many people love, and we've done all these amazing things through the podcast that we didn't expect.
Yeah.
We're just a couple of friends that sit around and talk about our favourite books. And I feel like the fact that we talk about such good content and material and the source materials, we're not just two white men with a microphone, you know? Yeah.
we're two white women.
we're two white queer women with a microphone. And some very good books to talk about, so it's fine.
True. It's interesting how, like, something like this can give you a sense of, like, self and a sense of agency. I think, like, for me, I definitely had kind of... this is going to sound so strange, but I think, like, you know, sometimes you get, like, bogged down in, like, the monotony of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it happens to all of us. And I think this podcast really made me remember, actually, I'm an intelligent person with a lot of thoughts and feelings, and I can articulate them quite well. And it really made me remember how much I enjoyed, like, literary analysis. I never, like, thought about that since I did lit at college. And I was like, yeah, that is actually something I really enjoy. So yeah, it's been wild. It's been so fun, it's been so hard, it's been so much work. But overall, it's been, like, a really, really good experience. I'll never, ever forget those 2 minutes before we spoke to Lynn and we were on Squadcast. And I was like, my ass is sweating. I was like, I had a full meltdown. I was like, I don't think I can do this. And, like, usually it's not, I'm not like that. And I was like, I don't think I can do it. Because I think the thing is with stuff like that is that you have it in the calendar for ages, so you just worry about it for months. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, fuck. And I was like, I can't do this. And then Lynn appeared like 2 minutes earlier. And it's funny, isn't it? Because it's always those 5 minutes before that you freak out. But then when it happens, you just switch. Like, a switch flicks and you're just on.
Mm.
And that's interesting to learn. I think we've learned a lot of different things about ourselves through this process. And that being one of them, that if needed, we both can flip that switch and be, like, professional.
Absolutely. And we're very lucky that, like, I think a lot of people that we've interviewed have said to us, like, oh, you've asked some really good questions here, and a lot of those really good questions have been from our listeners and from our patrons in the Discord, and, like, a lot of the reason we're so able to kind of have that discourse with people that have worked on the show that also have these passions for the books is that we do this every other week, and we have these conversations with not just each other but the rest of the community that we've kind of become this lovely part of. It's like, yay.
Yeah, that's the other thing, isn't it, to talk about, is, like, the community, the His Dark Materials community is lovely. We've met some lovely people, and we have some really, really intelligent, lovely listeners, and some of those made the crazy decision to give us money, and we were like, oh my god, crazy, because we didn't think that would ever happen. So yeah, like, I've loved every second of, you know, doing stuff on Patreon and doing watch-alongs and all that kind of stuff. It's been so fun. And I know that's something that we both want to continue.
It is. I think we realised this year, or on this book particularly, that, like, recording editing and putting out the podcast, especially with life throwing a lot of curveballs at us mm-hmm. in the last 12 months, that we kind of quite happily, sometimes unhappily, at capacity
yeah.
of just getting this podcast out. We're very, very grateful that there's people willing to support us mm-hmm. just staying at that capacity
yeah.
and not overwhelming ourselves. And I think yeah. that's the thing. Like, we've got a very understanding audience mm-hmm. that gets that it's like, actually, this is a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I wouldn't change it for anything. I've loved doing the podcast.
Yeah, me too.
It's not over. We've still got more to do.
Okay, we still got more to do.
Just like looking back.
I know. Yeah, I think, you know, we're two people that don't really like doing this and don't do it enough, but we should try and pat ourselves on the back for everything
that
we've done.
Pat yourself on the back. And you, listening, pat yourself on the back because I am one for like binge listening to a podcast and then stopping and like not being able to listen again. So if you've made it all the way through all of these books, all of these chapters, all of the TV series, all the bonus episodes, and you've listened to every single one, oh my god, we salute you. If you've picked up halfway through because that's where you were at reading the books, also we salute you.
Hi, for sure.
How was that jumping in halfway?
For sure. Wait, I wonder if I can look how many episodes we've done. 131. So this will be our 132nd
wow.
episode. So we'll do around nearly 140 by the time we've done all the like bonus wrap up, lantern slides, all that kind of stuff.
That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy.
You stuck it out.
Yeah. Well done.
Congratulations.
So did we. Well done us. Well done everyone. We're all in this together, you know, as Troy Bolton once said.
Exactly. Well, I guess while we're being all nostalgic for a hot minute, I'm going to crack out a catchphrase that we haven't used in a long time. We bloody love an email.
Yeah, we bloody do.
And we have a couple of episodes to do before we do a mailbag. So if ever there was a time to try and sum up your feelings about these books, the podcast, anything we've talked about, some of our random tangents, who knows?
Yeah.
Pop it in an email, send it to us. We actually stand a very good chance of reading it out on the mailbag because we're doing a mailbag episode.
Yeah, for sure. We've got a little email folder that I look after that's already got a bunch in there from just random emails coming through as they do. But yeah, please, please do. Pop mailbag in the subject so that I know. But yeah, we'd just love to hear from you all.
Yeah. And it is what people say at the beginning of emails, I know you bloody love an email. Or like, I'm aware that we haven't said it in a while. We do. We bloody love an email. And every time we get one, either me or Faye will send each other a little message being like, oh, we've just got a lovely email in the inbox. And then the other one will go and read it and then be like, oh, that was so nice.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. So yeah, please do. Please do email us with thoughts, feelings, all that kind of stuff. Whatever you want to say, really. You know, we love to read it. And I know for myself with... I know we have a lot of listeners that maybe don't have other people that like His Dark Materials, so they don't really talk to anyone else about it. And I know that, like, I'm very similar in terms of, like, you know, we all have our, like, kind of niche interests that maybe our other friends don't share. So it's sometimes nice to get those, like, feelings out to somebody. So definitely, definitely shoot us an email because we do bloody love an email.
We would love that. That would be so nice.
We would. Do we have anything else to talk about?
Aside from being really mushy.
Yeah.
Thank you for supporting us. We appreciate you. Buy a t-shirt. I'm putting out a new t-shirt imminently.
Oh, yes.
Imminently.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Yes. I had to hold off to put this t-shirt design out until we've recorded this episode.
Yes.
Because it is a collection of all of the random band names that we have stumbled across and created during this entire podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I've put them all onto a t-shirt that looks like a festival t-shirt design. So I think the big print is going to be probably a back print and then I'll design like a cool pocket print for the front. It's going to be amazing. And I'm working on getting that ready for like actually being released by the time we're doing the next few episodes.
Yeah.
Because what if I come up with a really cool band name today?
True, true. And also, I guess on that note, is that t-shirt is definitely coming and it's amazing, but just bear with us because... It's hard getting t-shirt designs through.
It
and
takes
like,
us a little while.
Getting together to like take pictures of them and all that boring stuff that you don't really need to know about. But just know that it is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And we will definitely obviously post about it on social media when it does happen. But just hopefully in the next few episodes that we record, we can tell you a little bit more about
when
it.
When it's ready.
Yeah, yeah. But it's definitely coming. So
in the meantime, look at all the other cool t-shirts.
Yeah.
I designed. I made this.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Buy some merch. We've got loads of mugs. If you want a mug,
oh my God, get one. Why am I not drinking from one of our mugs right now?
Right. Why aren't you? But also, I'm moving house soon. And I don't have the t-shirts, but I have the mugs and I have all the other merch. So you'd really be doing me a solid if we bought a mug or a list pad or stickers or bookmarks. Because then I don't have to move them all to my new house. Mm. So, yeah, do me a solid, pals.
Do it.
Okay, so is it demon time?
Hey, Faye.
Hi.
Hopefully not for the last time. Mm-hmm. I'll still ask you this in episodes to come.
Yeah.
What do you think your demon would have been this week?
I have no idea. Mm-hmm. Because when I did my notes, I didn't think of one because I thought maybe we could discuss it together for the last episode and see what we thought both of our demons would be. And also I just couldn't think of one.
Fair. I was wondering if it was like, oh, this is the last chapter. This is where Will and Lyra's demons settle officially. Well, last chapter they settled officially, didn't they?
Yeah.
I think it's my original demon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So for me, that's Tabby Cat 1.0, classic, 100% house cat, sweet baby.
Yeah.
And for you, that's a lovely little duck.
Yeah. I think that fits really well. Yeah.
I think so. Keep it classic for the ending. Single tear down my cheek.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Oh.
This is it.
Yeah.
Settled demons.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay. Well, shall we get into it?
Do we have to? Can we keep rambling?
Oh, let's just do an episode about where we talk about doing the podcast and then not the actual episode itself. Yeah, I think that's probably best.
Perfect.
Okay. Last chapter, we were emotionally destroyed as Lyra and Will were forced to make the most heartbreaking decision of all time.
Why?
In this chapter, Lyra and Will follow through on the decision to break their own hearts and ours.
We sort of get to catch up with some familiar faces, but we're too distracted by being emotional wrecks.
We tie up a lot of loose ends as a book, the series, and our coverage of His Dot Materials comes to a close. What?
No.
Oh my God, that...
Does it? Will it? We don't know.
What's going to happen? Okay. Oh my God, so we had this conversation, didn't we? Because you messaged me and you were like, does your last chapter have a quote? Mm-hmm. And I was out at the time, so I couldn't check. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't. I never told you it doesn't. So.
Well, I'm glad because I didn't have time to research it.
Yeah. So yeah, the last... And it's funny because when I made my notes, I guess I just didn't even notice. Obviously, you're more aware of the... I do read the quotes, but you're more aware of them than I am because you make the notes on them. So I guess I just didn't notice. And then, yeah, there's no quote.
No.
In mine, there's just like a big gap where it should be.
Because as you know from listening, my quotes have always been, I don't get the fun picture, I just get the quote crammed into a little square box where the picture is on Faye's. And so instead of the quote in the box, I've got the exact same illustration as Faye, which is two flowers tied with a little ribbon at the bottom, intertwining.
And then leaving again. Yeah. Like in... I guess
like pads crossing, diverging, crossing again, and then
growing their separate ways. Love it. Great.
Wow.
Love it.
Wow.
Yay.
Sure. So it's actually a very pretty illustration.
It is really
and I've
nice.
Decided that if I get a His Dot Materials tattoo, another.
I was going to say, another, if you get one, you've got a fucking massive one.
I do. If I were to get another one, it might be this because it's a very pretty illustration and it's about being fucking heartbroken, isn't it? So.
Do you know how, like, I guess I just, like, had a brain fart moment. We were talking about tattoos, obviously. And I was like, you know what? If I got His Dot Materials tattoo, I might get a knife.
Girl, you have
a knife. I've got one.
We literally both have a knife.
It's because it's on the back of my arm and I never see it. So, like,
she's there.
I got it. I already got it. I don't have to go through that pain.
You did that. That's going to be added to the list of nostalgic things we've done.
Yes.
Because of this podcast. We've both got permanent body art.
Yeah.
As a result of these books and this podcast.
Yeah. Crazy. Oh my God. Okay, so here we go. So it's been a little while since we both read this chapter, because we were originally going to record it a few weeks ago, and then we were both like, well, we're going to be in the same room, so mm-hmm. bear with us if we're like, what?
Yes.
But the first thing to note is that the Egyptians arrive. They're back.
They have, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's time. This chapter's going to be a combo of me being like, oh, this person, I'm so happy to see them again, and me being like, why?
Yeah.
why life?
It is very weird to see them again. I feel like they fit into a version of this story where, and obviously we get like a little bit of a few lines where they mention that Lyra's grown up, but they fit into a version of the story in my head where Lyra's still a little baby. So it's like seeing them again, you're just a bit like, oh, it's good to see them, obviously, because we love them. We love Bert Dad. But it's like, oh, wow, okay. Yeah, mm-hmm. Here they are.
This is it.
Yeah.
They're back. The Egyptians are here. I will say, justice for Mark Oster.
Yes.
One of my favourite characters of the cast of Egyptians that we get.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget, because they do a good job of bringing her back in the TV series, I forget that she's not as prominent in the books. She kind of leaves them as everybody goes off to Bolvanger. She stays back in Oxford.
Mm-hmm.
And she must still be there, because she's not here right
she's
now.
She's not here.
And it's an absolute travesty.
I will say that I've been... my partner's never seen his dark material, so we've been watching it together. And he really likes it. We're just on to season 3 now. And I was telling you yesterday, every time there's a previously on, you get the, she's your mother, Lyra.
She's your mother, Lyra.
And it just like goes round and round in my head. I always forget the actress's name, but she's fucking great.
Yeah.
I love
her. Is she in Shameless?
She was in Shameless. Yeah. Her and James McAvoy were both in Shameless. Mm. We had this conversation before. Yes. And then they got married and then they got divorced. But yeah, she's great. I love her. Anne-Marie Duff. That's it. Anne-Marie Duff, she's great. She's a really good Mark Oster. But yeah, I feel you. Like, justice for Mark Oster. Like, she should be here. She's been through enough, and she's tough. Like, she's tough as shit, ain't she? Tough as bloody nails.
Like, right? Lyra needs, like, a mum hug as well.
For sure.
And Mark Oster is the person to deliver that proper, like, hug that she needs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
And it's not here.
No.
She's not here, but we do have John Farr, Farr Decorum, and... various other Egyptians with us, which is very exciting. And Serafina Pekala.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. So Serafina's like guiding them, and we learn there's a lot of like courtesy and grace, isn't there, between like the Malefa and the Egyptians, which is really nice that I like. And I put like a sticker next to this one, which is each side, of course, was on fire with curiosity about the other, but John Farr had learned plenty of courtesy and patience in his long life, and he was determined that these strangest of all people should receive nothing but grace and friendship from the Lord of the Western Egyptians. That's just really nice.
Yeah. I love it. I love that Mary's had a little chat with the Malefa about what the deal is with humans and people from Lyra's world and the Egyptians, and then... obviously, the Egyptians are coming in and go, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Elephant monsters, if you will.
How dare you bring that back
up? How dare I? But they are incredibly polite. And the Malefa are lovely people. And they have done a lot of very good prep for their arrival. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. Yes.
Do you... because we get this speech from, like, Satomax, which is, like, welcoming him. And then, I don't know, right? I don't know whether I found it funny or sweet that they, like, carry Father Corum. Like, it is... it is, like, the idea of it is it's obviously very sweet, like, very lovely, because obviously he's old and, like, Farr Decorum needs it. But the image of it in my head just makes me laugh. Like, imagining them, like, placing him onto a Malefa, because he probably can't get up there himself. Yeah. Like, I'm just
and
like,
and then
okay.
I'm imagining his cat just, like, hopping up and curling up on his lap as well, being like...
do you think he's side saddle, or do you think he's...
Because... of the way that the Malefa are described as basically being like a square frame.
Yeah, so I think
he'd sit cross-legged. I think he'd sit cross-legged like he's on a comfy cushion.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. God, that's wild to think about it, isn't it?
Then again, can a man that ancient sit cross-legged? Mm. Who knows?
I mean, I can barely sit cross-legged for like an amount of time before I'm like, ow.
Yes.
Okay, so we get the reunion with Lyra. I'll just read it because it's so sweet.
Yay.
Such an age had gone past since Lyra had seen these dear men. They'd last spoken together in the snows of the Arctic on their way to rescue the children from the gobblers. She was almost shy and she offered her hand to shake uncertainly, but John Farr caught her up in a tight embrace and kissed both her cheeks, and Farr Decorum did the same, gazing at her before folding her tight to his chest. "She's grown up, John," he said. "Remember that little girl we took to the Northlands? Look at her now, eh? Lyra, my dear, if I had the tongue of an angel, I couldn't tell you how glad I am to set eyes on you again." That is so lovely. That's so cute. I had the tongue of an angel bit, like, what? That's poetry. That's fucking poetry.
It's spitting verses.
Right? It's so nice.
Yeah, it's lovely. We're going to probably get it quite a lot this chapter because we know how much Phil loves to shoot us back in our memories all the way back to the beginning, like we've just been doing about our own podcasting journey. But yes, reminding us of how very small Lyra was when she last saw the Egyptians and what it was like back at Bolvanger, back in the Arctic, before she took a step into a completely new world.
Yeah. Yeah, and they notice that she looks frail and she looks weary and that...
She looks fucked up.
Yeah, to put it a little bit of a better way, she looks fucked up. Mm-hmm. And her and Will just stay close to each other, like won't move away from each other. Serafina had told them what Will's done, so they're very, like, respectful towards Will. And Will... I don't know, this is interesting to me. It says, for Will's part, he admired the massive power of Lord Far's presence, power tempered by courtesy, and he thought that that would be a good way to behave when he himself was old. John Far was shelter and a strong refuge. And again, I like that we're getting, when I grow up, I want to be like John Far. Like, it's very, very sweet, very, like, childlike.
Yeah, I think it speaks as well to... a lot of the decisions that Will's been making about himself, especially in the way that he spoke, has spoken to people that have told him that he's a warrior.
Yeah.
And the way that he's kind of decided to, like, move away from that. He doesn't think of himself as being that.
Mm-hmm.
But he's witnessing in someone else that has, like, power and strength, that they're giving off vibes that are safety and shelter.
Yes.
And he's like, that's what I want to do.
Yes.
And I appreciate that for Will, that it's quite a lot of... self-awareness and like wholesome male role models for him, because he's got like an absent father. Did he meet Asriel? Because he was a shit bag.
I don't think he did.
Yeah, like he's not had a ton of good male role models at all. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that, like, the first time he's meeting John Far, he's gone, this guy seems like warm and comforting.
Yeah.
And while also being like this hulking presence, like, yes, I would like to be that.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
He's going to get swole. He's going to move home, get swole.
I like that John Far is... he wants his men to see the land. He wants them to see this new world, because he's basically like, they've, like, put everything on the line for me and, like, the Egyptians. They deserve to be able to tell stories of this world to their families, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
So they all come onto the land and they all, like, get together and have food and stuff, and it's really nice.
I love the way that they swap gifts.
Yes.
And they, like, share trinkets and stuff. Yeah. I feel like that's really, really cute. We have, that evening, the peoples of three worlds sat down together and shared bread and meat and fruit and wine. The Egyptians presented their hosts with gifts from all corners of their world, with crocks of Geneva, carvings of walrus ivory, silken tapestries from Turkestan, and cups of silver from the mines of Sweden, and enamel dishes from Korea. Just a bit of Phil really enjoying writing all the place names that he's, like, slightly altered.
Yes.
Very much giving Northern Lights energy.
Yeah, because I think we've had Sweden before, but we haven't had Korea. With a C.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the Malefa received them with delight, and in return offered objects of their own workmanship, rare vessels of ancient knotwood, lengths of the finest rope and cord, lacquered bowls, and fishing nets so strong and light that even the fen-dwelling Egyptians had never seen the like. I just think it's so cute. They have a little gift swap, little gift exchange.
Yeah, it's so adorable. Nice. It is really nice. It's
and you can
sweet.
See, like, the value that the different people put on things, because the Egyptians are travelling people, so they're bringing things from all corners of their world. And the Malefa are sustainable queens.
Yes.
And they're giving the Egyptians, like, look at these amazing, like, handcrafted, wholesome items that we've made with our sraf, with our energy. Like, mm-hmm. they're embodied with our consciousness, because that's how we view the world. And it's like, amazing.
It's really nice. And then we get this part where the Malefa want to show the Egyptians... In my notes, I'm so sorry, I've called it the ghost hole.
I think I might have called it that too. Amazing.
I'm so sorry.
I think I called it ghost window, actually, because I'm not depraved.
Would ghost hole be a bad name? Just saying.
It could be a very good band name.
Yeah, I reckon so. Ghost Hole. They'd be a bit like Sleep Token, I think.
Yeah.
Quite heavy.
Quite heavy. Mm. But also
theatrical.
Like...
A little bit like Ghost, but heavier.
Yeah.
because Sleep Token are heavy and they're quiet, but they're theatrical as well.
You see, I heard Hole, and I was thinking, like, also Courtney Love
energy. Oh, yeah.
So, like...
Ghost Hole.
Yeah, Ghost Hole.
Spooky Hole. No. I'm sorry. So, yes, we learn that the Malefa are taking... Because obviously the Ghost Hole is in the Malefa land. They're taking that responsibility very seriously, and they're talking about that they're going to build, like, a lovely... I can't remember the word that they use. Like, a almost like a garden around it, and, like, keep it really safe. And they want to show the Egyptians, or John IV and Fardacorum. So they go and they show it them. And they both just... They have such a way with words that I'm just going to read it. So they go to it and the ghosts are still coming out. Fardacorum says, "Well, this is a mystery, and I'm glad I lived long enough to see it. To go into the dark of death is a thing we all fear. Say what we like, we fear it. But if there's a way out for that part of us that has to go down there, then it makes my heart lighter." "You're right, Corum," said John Farr. "I've seen a good many folk die. I've sent more than a few men down into the dark myself, though it was always in the anger of battle. To know that after a spell in the dark we'll come out again to a sweet land like this, to be free of the sky like birds, well, that's the greatest promise anyone could wish for." "We must talk to Lyra about this," said Fardacorum, "and learn how it all came about and what it means." And I would just like to... just... I know we've praised Bert Dad so much, but he... I love the fact that he wants to learn from Lyra. Like, Lyra's a child. I think there are a lot of adults that would just... we've talked about, obviously, what is, like, a very big theme in the books. We've talked about it loads, especially in, like, Northern Lights and stuff. But a lot of adults are very quick to dismiss children. And, like, Fardacorum has never been like that. He's always been very much like, oh, no, we've got to go and talk to Lyra and, like, learn. She's going to tell us about it and we're going to learn from her. And I think that's really lovely that that's his immediate thought of being like, we need to learn what this means. And I will gladly take that information from a 13-year-old girl. It's great.
Yeah, he is the first one, like, the first person to give, like, an incredibly nuanced and intelligent take on, like, witnessing something incredibly profound. Because, like, I feel like most people would look at that and be like, holy shit, that's a bunch of ghosts. And then not really know what to say. But the fact that he can put it all together and be like, say the most profound thing about being like, oh, it's so nice to know that the fear of the unknown that is dying is somewhat known to me now.
Yeah.
And that I've lived long enough to see it and, like, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Just, yeah. All right, profound king.
Right?
Truly. So profound.
Truly, truly. So, Mary then gets her goodbye with Atal and the Malefa, and they give her a gift, which is a lacquer file containing some of the wheel tree oil, and most precious of all, a little bag of seeds.
Very important.
Yes. So, and Atal's like, they might not grow in your world, but if not, you've got the oil. Don't forget us, Mary.
Yeah.
And Mary says, never, never. If I live as long as the witches and forget everything else, I'll never forget you and the kindness of your people, Atal.
So sweet. Also, of all the gifts that have been given by the Malefa to the Egyptians, you can feel the importance of, like, these are the gifts that we give to be like, look at this cool stuff we made.
Yeah.
This is a gift that we give to somebody that we trust and we love and we feel is one of us. Like, the seeds are so precious to them.
Yeah.
And the oil is so precious. And you know that Mary's going to look after them and that she's going to use her science brain and it's going to be so cute.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So they set sail and they sail for 2 weeks. Well, fucking age, isn't it?
It is, but you know what? At least Will and Lyra get to spend 2 weeks on a boat together. Yeah,
get a little bit more time.
A little bit more quality time.
Yeah. We get this interesting part about how the two Oxfords will end up, like, lying over each other again once all the windows are closed. Like, they're quite far apart now, but once all the windows are closed, it'll, like, pull them back together in a way.
Yeah, that's, like, a concept that I am... like, with really bringing this up in the last chapter.
Yeah,
not only every time a window gets cut do maybe spectres get released, but also it makes the world shift out of position somehow.
Yeah.
Like, out of alignment. That's wild to me. And I was like, I thought maybe it was that, like, the Asriel explosion potentially caused the brunt of that misalignment, which would make sense because that's, like, a huge tear in the fabric of everything. But, like... or even the abyss probably exacerbated it more. But the idea that every little window has knocked the world slightly further apart is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, what a thing to be bringing up in the very last chapter, by the way.
Yeah, by the way.
Here's a new concept. Yeah. Your heads, your little heads, your little emotionally devastated heads around. Yeah. Enjoy.
Yeah. There's also, like, now a really confusing bit about them being in Chittagatse, and I just don't think it's clear at all. So we get this little bit where it says, at the moment, however, talking about the worlds being overlapped, they were a long way apart as far as Lyra had had to travel from her Oxford to Chittagatse. And then we're just in Chittagatse, but it doesn't really say that we've arrived there. It just starts talking about, as the anchor splashed into the water, the late sun lay warmly on the green hills, the terracotta roofs, and we're just like, oh, okay, so we're in Chittagatse. In the terms of, like, obviously we know they're travelling somewhere and it makes sense that they have to go there to get back, but I'm just like, the way that that paragraph's worded doesn't make it clear that that's where they were going, because they do mention Chittagatse, but it's very much like, oh, remember when Lyra had to travel from her Oxford there?
Yeah, it's very, I feel, strange. Like, that's why Phil throws in the 2 weeks.
Yeah.
He's just like, anything can happen in 2 weeks. Yeah. Like, a majority of the second book happens in the space of 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But, like, because it's confusing, because I know that there is the window that goes from Lyra's Arctic to Chittagatse.
Yeah.
Because that's the Azrael explosion window.
Yeah.
And then we know there's a window that goes Chittagatse to Will's world. Mm-hmm. But as far as I can tell, well, then there must be a window that goes Chittagatse to the Malefa world, because that's the one that Mary goes through, but that's in the mountain somewhere.
Yeah.
Where is this other Chittagatse to Malefa world window that we can boat ride
through? Yeah, that we can sail to. Like, what the fuck?
I'm so confused.
It's so confusing. Like, it is really confusing. I think that we just have to look past it. In the, like, name of the last chapter, you've just got to be like, okay, Phil is, like, taking some liberties here.
Yeah,
he's like, it's the last one.
Got to get everybody home somehow. Yeah. I don't know how the Egyptians got here, but we need to see them again.
Yeah.
To feel safe, so I guess we're on a boat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. They're all in Chittagatse, apparently. They all, like, eat a last meal together. Will says bye to everyone. And then it says that they see him as a young, strong and deeply stricken person. I'm like, same. Same as this.
I mean, it's bold to call yourself younger at the ripe age of 32, but sure.
Rude. Rude. Look, a witch would think I was so young. Actually.
True. You're just a baby, really.
I'm just a baby. It's true. I say it all the time. So now we're just with Will, Lyra, their demons, Mary and Seraphina Pecola, and they're all about to set off to find the window that goes into Will's Oxford, right? So they're just, like, wandering towards that. And Lyra wants to go a little way into Mary's and Will's Oxford, but we don't know why yet.
We pass the cafe where they first met. And they get to have a little moment where we remember Lyra not knowing what omelettes were. I just think, I love the nostalgia of making a point of them kind of noticing and, like, noting that they've, like, spotted the cafe.
Yeah, I know. So Seraphina asks Mary what she's going to do. And she talks about how she wants to look after Will, although she doesn't really say it in that way, which I actually really like, which again, she has a similar vibe to, like, Fada Coram in the sense that she treats these children as her equals, because she's more like, I want to be his friend. And she talks about, like, that she'd be there to help him in terms of, like, she says to Seraphina that there's loads of, like, rules and regulations around, you know, with Will and his mum and looking after his mum and all that kind of stuff. But the way that it's worded is really lovely, because it just, because she says as well, she says, he'll be the only person in my whole world that I can talk to about all of this. She never, like, belittles him or, like, treats him in, like he's a kid. It's very nice to
it's
see.
It's simultaneously, like, I know he's got a mum. I know his mum is vulnerable.
Yeah.
I know that I exist in my world with a level of privilege as, like, an adult that knows how to navigate the system. And I want to use that to, like, protect and facilitate what he wants to do with his life.
Yeah.
And the people he cares. It's, like, respecting his autonomy at the same time as being very aware that I am a grown up and he is still, he is still a child and does not have the same access to things that I will.
Yeah, for sure.
Kind of thing. I think it's quite a good, like you said, it's a very respectful way of saying, I want to look after you without saying, let me be your mum.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure, for sure. So they find the window that Mary and Will came through, or that Will came through. Did Mary? No, did you say the one that Mary was in the mountains? Right, we're just going to have to look past all this shit, aren't we?
Phil's saying, forget about what you remember of where all these windows are. They're everywhere.
Convenient
for us.
That's
why the angels are closing them, I guess.
Convenient for us, because we do forget a lot of things.
That's true.
But they go through it into Will's Oxford, Will and Mary's Oxford, and then Will closes the window.
They pass the window that Mary went through that's in the little tent, the research tent, and Will closes that as they pass it. and they're like, oh, that'll surprise them next time. Oh, yeah. And I'm imagining this like government facility that have been like probably scanning this window, yeah, and like, oh my God, it's energy from another world.
Yeah. Wow.
And then just like showing up on Monday morning and being like, the fuck is it gone?
Yeah, that's so funny. I love it.
Like somebody's job just got obliterated overnight.
Yeah.
Like they probably set up a whole department, yeah, to research this thing and it's gone.
Just gone. It's just gone.
Yeah.
And we get this thing about Mary's demon, which is really nice.
Yeah.
So we know that Serafina told Mary about the shape of her demon, what it was. And Serafina's like, well, we have had time, and haven't we been talking? I've taught you some witch lore, which would be forbidden under the old ways in my world, but you are going back to your world, and the old ways have changed, and I too have learnt much from you. Now then, when you spoke to the shadows on your computer, you had to hold a special state of mind, didn't you? And again, it's that state of mind that Lyra holds with the alethiometer, Will holds, mm-hmm, with the knife.
What is it? Negative?
Oh, fuck, I just seen this in the show as well. It's,
not negative capability, that's, no, negative possibility.
No, that's so annoying. I've literally just seen it in the TV show. Yeah, negative capability.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, so it's that state. And this, like, kind of solidifies, doesn't it? Like, the way that then Mary is able to project and see her, mm-hmm, demon. That, because we talked about in the last chapter when, was it Zephania? I can't remember, probably, because she was so unhelpful. When she was like, oh, you do have a friend that can help you.
And yes, that, you already know someone, yeah, who knows how to see their demon. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that can, it was more,
or that can help you travel.
Yes. Like, and I think this kind of like solidifies that, yes, it is, mm-hmm, it is Mary. So yeah, Mary tries to do it. She compares it to those things that I always struggled with when I was a kid. Those, mm-hmm, like drawings that are like almost 3D vibes, and you have
magic
to like,
eye.
Yeah, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And although I'm quite good at negative capability, I think in terms of like when I feel like witchy and stuff, mm-hmm, I can kind of like hang my like consciousness weirdly. I was always really bad at those. I think it's eyesight wise, I guess, right?
I also agree that it's an eyesight thing, mm, because a lot of things that you read are like, oh, you just unfocus your eyes.
Yeah.
And that's not what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like,
because I can unfocus my eyes.
I can, but quite happily just drop all, yeah, focus, yeah, from my eyes,
exactly,
and go blank. Like, that's fine.
But it still didn't help me see the
no,
pictures.
It's going like, it's focusing really hard and going like halfway cross-eyed and halfway,
yeah,
back out or,
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's like a whole different situation,
yeah,
from just unfocusing.
Truly, truly. So I'm with you. I managed to do it like once, but it hurt. Like, it,
yeah,
made my eyes ache so badly that I was like, I don't want to do this again, no, actually.
I can just imagine Mary like walking around day to day, like being like, can I do that? And going like a little bit cross-eyed in,
yes,
the middle of the street, staring at a tree, trying,
yeah,
to see her demon.
Yeah. But yeah, she does manage it and her demon appears.
Yeah.
On an iron fence around the parkland sat a bird, glossy black with red legs and a curved yellow bill, an alpine chough, just as Seraphine had described it. He was only a foot or two away, watching her with his head slightly cocked for all the world as though he was amused.
He's like, hey, bitch, you can see me. I can see you.
It's so good.
Yes, yes. I love it. And Seraphine is like, oh, you've done it once. It'll be easier next time. You'll, mm-hmm, be able to like get into the practice of just,
yeah,
seeing him all the time. And I'm just imagining like day to day, like, kind of acknowledging your demon and existing with it, and people, I'm imagining that Mary's existence is going to be somewhat akin to Fleabag,
yeah,
where like she's probably going to be spacing,
oh,
out,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah,
kind of communicating,
yeah,
with her demon, and people in her life are going to be like, what's going on,
yeah,
here? And one day she's going to meet a hot priest,
yes, hell yeah, and he's going to notice it, and,
yeah,
it's going to be very shocking for everyone,
exactly,
that watches that show. But it's interesting because Serafina says that, because obviously Mary has to get into this state to see her demon.
Mm.
Will's demon, Kajaba, is just there. Everyone, mm, can see her. But then we learn from Serafina that nobody in Will's world will be able to see her.
Which I'm confused by. Does that mean that she'll go invisible?
I'm not sure. Like, will Will have to do the same thing to be able to see her? Or will she always be visible to him?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it?
The fact,
like,
that his is just a cat is kind of like, you could probably get away,
yeah,
with having a weird cat that hung around with you your whole life.
Yeah.
And people would just be like, oh, he's a strange cat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also interesting because, like, I kind of see why, obviously we know why it's happened, because Will went through that trauma of losing his demon, that it, I guess, pulled her into the present, like, into the world, essentially out of him. So yeah, will he lose the ability to see her back in his world and have to do what Mary does?
Will she like fade away and go invisible? Or will she... Yeah, it's kind of not really... I would like it to be that Will just doesn't have to put the same effort in that Mary does. And that he gets to still see his invisible cat friend.
Yeah, but same. Agreed.
It seems like an odd thing to just be like, oh, by the way, other people won't be able to see Will Steven anymore.
Yeah, it's very strange. Yeah. Mary also wonders whether she'll be able to talk to her demon as well, but then we don't really find anything out about that. And they go through Will's Oxford, they're near Mary's flat, and then we learn that Lyra wants to go to the Botanic Gardens, and I'm like, do we have to go there? Do we? Should we? No.
Really?
No.
But we learn that it's near where Mary lives. Mm-hmm. Mary's like, oh, I remember this, my flat's not far from here. So it's kind of cute to know that it's somewhere that Lyra goes frequently. Mm-hmm. It's a spot that Lyra knows and that is near where Mary lives. So, like, maybe they've always lived sort of near each other when the worlds were stacked on top of each other, that they've been floating around the same spaces. That's really cute.
Yeah. And Mary tries to see her demon again, and this time it hops on her hand and she feels like the weight of it, and it's very cute.
Yes.
Yeah. So Lyra and Will go into the Botanic Garden. I wonder how, because obviously I've never been to the Oxford or the Botanic Garden or the bench or anything like that.
That's a special episode right there.
Yes.
We'll get done one
definitely. I wonder how, I mean, listeners, please tell us how accurate the description of how they get to the bench, you know, and it says like, oh, they go over the bridge and all blah, blah, blah. How accurate that is to where the bench actually is in the Botanic Garden. Or did they just put it where they could?
My thought is that it's a bench that Phil knows because he went to Oxford Uni. Mm-hmm. I think he was probably frequented those colleges and those areas. And I feel like he would write it. It seems like the kind of level of potentially sentimental and pedantic that he would be to write it accurately.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, did he know when he was writing this third book how big they were?
Yeah.
He did. And would he be like, oh, I can't make it too obvious where it is because then my favourite spot in Oxford will be swarmed with people.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah.
That is true. But yeah, people that know it, you'll have to let us know if it is an accurate description. Mm-hmm. So then we get this horrendously awful bit. Would you like to read it?
Sure. Lyra led him almost to the end of the garden, over a little bridge to a wooden seat under a spreading low branch tree. Yes, she said. I hope so much, and here it is, just the same. Will, I used to come here in my Oxford and sit on this exact same bench whenever I wanted to be alone, just me and Pan. What I thought was that if you, maybe just once a year, if we could come here at the same time, just for an hour or something, and we could pretend we were close again, because we would be close if you sat here and I sat just here in my world. Yes, he said. As long as I live, I'll come back. Wherever I am in the world, I'll come back here. On Midsummer's Day, she said, at midday, as long as I live, as long as I live. He found himself unable to see, but he let the hot tears flow and just held her close. And if we, later on, she was whispering shakily, if we meet someone that we like and if we marry them, then we must be good to them and not make comparisons all the time and wish we were married to each other instead. But just keep coming here once a year, just for an hour, just to be together. They held each other tightly. Minutes passed. A waterbird on the river beside them stirred and called. The occasional car moved all over Magdalen Bridge. And finally, they drew apart.
I have to read this.
You can take over because I'm done.
Yeah, I have to read this bit. Everything about her in that moment was soft. And that was one of his favourite memories later on. Her tense grace made tender by the dimness. Her eyes and hands, and especially her lips, infinitely soft. He kissed her again and again, and each kiss was nearer to the last one of all. Heavy and soft with love, they walked back to the gate. Mary and Seraphina were waiting. Lyra, Will said, and she said, Will. Okay, so, right.
Can I just say, not the last fucking words they ever say to each other being just each other's names and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
Everything else is done in silence.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep.
That feels, like, horrendous to me. Yep.
Same.
Like, same. It feels a bit funeral-ish almost. Yeah. Like, in the fact that, like, they've had this intense conversation, this emotional conversation. They're walking all the way away from the bench,
mm-hmm.
meeting up with other people, walking to this window, walking to this spot, cutting this window, yada, 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 yada. in silence.
Yeah.
And crying.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is so intense.
I know. I know. So, yeah, they don't say anything else to each other, but Will turns to Serafina and he says, "Thank you, Serafina Pecola, for rescuing us at the Belvedere and for everything else. Please be kind to Lyra for as long as she lives. I love her more than anyone has ever been loved." Do you know what? Right. I'm trying not to cry. I'm crying, but it's fine. I found really interesting in this section of when they part,
mm-hmm.
and the bits running up to it, it's all from Will's perspective. We don't get Lyra's perspective. Yeah, we don't get Lyra's feelings. We get Will's feelings about the situation. We don't get anything from Lyra.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe it's because it's a bit of a, like, almost harsh juxtaposition when the window closes and then we switch to Lyra. Then we don't get Will. We don't know anything about Will again then. We leave, God. I know, we leave Will and Mary in their Oxford, and then the rest of this chapter is just about Lyra.
Mm.
And a little, we see a little bit into the future. We go, like, 3 weeks ahead, don't we? But nothing from Will. So I wonder whether, like...
Yeah, it's literally from, like, the knife breaking.
Yeah.
And done. Then we're done with him.
Yeah.
Bye. Can I just... We read the Midsummer's Day bit.
Mm-hmm.
We were very busy being very emotional about mm-hmm. it. We actually discussed how fucking adorable that concept is
mm-hmm.
and how incredibly romantic
yeah.
that is, like, and the fact that they are fucking teenagers, it is the melodrama of being a teenager yeah, that sure. comes up with that concept, but it is the dedication of genuinely being in love that follows through with that concept.
Yeah.
And that is, like, one of the most heartbreakingly beautiful concepts of, like, all time, so much so that Lynn based one of the songs from In the Heights in it.
Yeah.
And it's, like, one of those things that sticks with people, and the fact that people visit that bench on mm-hmm. Midsummer's Day and, like, leave flowers for them and stuff, like, actual people in our real world visit the bench, and it's like
When I read these books for the first time, it wasn't the notion of Lyra and Will being separated that, like, made me cry like an actual baby. Mm-hmm. It was the bench moment, and I think there's something very, it's just, like, a phenomenal thing for all the ways that you've just listed, and also to have something like that not be inherently cringe.
Mm.
Like, to have a romantic gesture, I don't think I could write that without it sounding so cliche and cringe. And I just think that to come up with something like that and to have it, like, stand the test of time forever is...
Yeah. I think part of that is that it comes from the... It's the fact that it's coming from, like, the innocence and the sincerity of them being teenagers. If that was a pair of, like, 30 or 40-year-olds... talking to each other and having that moment, I think I possibly would find it cringe.
Yeah.
But it's the, like...
Yeah.
Like, the total sincerity behind it as well that just breaks your heart. Like,
yeah. Do you think that they... I know, like, take the books of dust aside, pretend they don't exist. Mm-hmm. Do you think that they both visited the bench forever?
If we go by the... gorgeous little montage at the end of the last episode of the TV series that broke all of us.
Do you remember when I was like, if there's a fucking bench montage at the end of the episode, I'm gonna fucking riot. I was so
and
I was
riot, like,
I can't
did.
I did. I could not handle it. I was like, no. No.
Yeah. And I think they do, but in the same so this is the thing. In the same way that you potentially visit somebody's grave.
Yeah.
Like, it's very much like a part of mourning. And I imagine, so, like, I can't speak for everybody's experience of this, but, like, going back somewhere, it's like it probably feels significant for a lot of years to come while you're in the throes of, like, the most intense part of those grief. Yeah. But then potentially some life might get in the way 1 year, but that doesn't mean that the next year you won't come back
and do it.
And so I feel like they will do it, but there will be a point at which life is lifing. And they'll still try, or they'll think about it on that day, but they might not be able to make it back there. Or they might, like, 1 year, one of them might be there and the other one might be, like, busy.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what jobs they're going to have.
Yeah.
Like, and they might, like, still come, like, try to come back when they can. And then the idea of them missing each other is also heartbreaking. Yeah.
Do you think it becomes more of a... It becomes, thinking about, like, grief and stuff, it becomes less... attached to those feelings of love and grief, and more just something that they do every year. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Well, not like, that doesn't hold any weight, but...
It's like a ritual to
yes.
it.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That
yeah.
is like a...
Where they get so used to doing it that they just carry on doing it. Again, not to remove any weight from it, but you're like, okay, maybe one year they'll go and they won't feel as in their feelings about it anymore. They'll just be there and it's just something that they do.
Yeah. Like, and it's like a way to connect back to this thing as opposed to... Because I imagine, heartbreaking as it sounds, the longer they're in separate worlds from each other, the more distance they get from the situation, the entire thing. Like, perhaps, like you said, the less in their feelings they'll be about everything. But maybe going back and having those bench moments is a way to connect back to that time and, like, remember that.
I also think...
And, like, yeah.
Yeah, for Will, especially, I know that he has Mary to, like, anchor him into it. But for Lyra and her world... They already have demons, they already have armoured bears, they have witches. For, like, Will in our world, I wonder how his memory plays a part and how his brain has, like, maybe changed things and has maybe said, did that even happen? Like, again, Mary will definitely help with that. But when you're a kid, your brain's not fully formed yet. And when it becomes fully formed as an adult, I think back on stuff. I know that obviously what happened to them was severely traumatic and just ridiculously... like, adventurous. But, you know, sometimes you think about your childhood memories and you're like, did that happen? Or did I just, like, make that up in my head and now it feels like it's a memory but maybe it isn't? So I wonder how much of that, for Will especially, happens.
Yeah, or even just, like, the melodramatic things you will have said to your, like, teenage boyfriend.
Yeah.
Or, like, teenage love interest of any kind. Like, and, like, being like, oh, we'll do this forever. Yeah. And then now you look back as an adult and you're like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I was such a baby. Yeah, that's adorable that I thought I'd do that forever.
Yeah.
And, like, the fact that this is one of the greatest love stories of all time, I'm going to say it. I think it is.
It is, it is.
Means that, yes, we want them to come back to the bench every year and break our hearts every single year without fault. But, like, I kind of also enjoy thinking about it in the practicality of life. And, like, yeah, is Will going to be like, God, remember when I made that promise to that girl that I was madly in love with as a teenager? Like,
I also think, like, think how much it would impact your life. Maybe one of them might be like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I have to let go of this.
Imagine dating someone new. And like Lyra said, like, you go get married, be good to that person, but still come back to this bench every year. Like, imagine if at some point your partner is like, you know how, like, every year on Midsummer's Day, despite the fact that we now live in, like, Scotland,
we
travel all the way down to Oxford to go sit on a bench for an hour. Like, what's that about? Yeah. And then if he's like... Oh, yeah, that's my, like, ex-girlfriend from when I was a teenager. Yeah. Like, made this promise.
Yeah. Or, like, we can't go on holiday around that time because you have to go back to that bench.
Peak summer holiday time.
Yeah. But, yeah, I do wonder, like, I think it sounds, like, sad to say it, but at one point one of them might feel like they just have to let go of it, especially because it's attached to so much trauma because they went through so much that what if they went to therapy... And the therapist was just like, you gotta try,
you gotta stop with the bench.
Yeah. You gotta let go.
Although, I feel like a therapist would be like, you need to figure out how you're framing this for yourself.
Is it something
you do as an act of self-care to remember a thing that was important to you and that nourished you? Yeah. Or is it repeatedly stabbing yourself in the heart with the most devastating thing that ever happened to you?
Yeah.
What are we doing here? Yeah. Are we reliving trauma or are we celebrating a relationship that we enjoyed?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Interesting.
The answer is birth. Always.
Yes, always. So. Right. Serafina kisses Will on both cheeks. Lyra had been talking to Mary. They have a little hug as well. And Will does this thing where he's like, right, I'm going to be cheerful from now. I'm going to be cheerful. I'm like, maybe it's not the right time.
Oh, you got to put on a brave face though, babies.
Yeah. So he says, and he knew that Lyra was doing the same and that the tightness and strain in her smile were the sign of it. Nevertheless, she smiled. One last kiss, rushed and clumsy so that they banged cheekbones and a tear from her eye was transferred to his face. Their two demons kissed farewell and Pantalaimon flowed over the threshold and up into Lyra's arms. And then Will began to close the window and then it was done. The way was closed. Lyra was gone. One thing that, like, really got me... Number one, I fucking love that their last kiss was, like, clumsy and, like, just not... a big momentous moment, because it would be, wouldn't it? You're like fucking hysterical. Like, I know that both of them aren't crying at that point, but think of all the feelings that are happening. And, well, they are crying because Lyra transfers a tear.
Cries on his face, yeah.
But, like, yes, so it makes sense that it would be...
It's 100% the snottiest kiss.
Yeah, gotcha.
Like, there's no way that's
And also,
snotty.
Like, Serafina and Mary are watching them. It's all rushed because they've got to get through the window and then close it. There's a whole lot of other shit happening, so
it's
that makes
sense.
It's
reminiscent of their, like, first kiss as well. And yeah. How they're described as, like, moths bumping into each other. Yeah. Like, there's something... really lovely about the way that it reflects their last kiss reflects their first kiss and how like clumsy it is. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
I'm fine.
One thing, the other thing that like really got me, which I think is just like a fucking beautiful bit of like writing, like almost poetry, is Lyra's tear transferring to Will's face and then it's still being there when he closes the window. That's the only thing he has left of her is this tear on his face.
Why the fuck did he not steal that backpack? Steal the tiny backpack and cry over it.
I was literally going to say, like, it's interesting to me. I know they don't really have a lot of physical possessions because of what they've been through. Mm. But, like, that they didn't give each other some kind of, like, physical thing.
Yeah, a little love token.
Yeah. I can't with that tear.
But also, imagine closing that window and days later thinking, fuck, I could have given her something to remember me by.
Yeah.
I could have had something of hers to remember her by, other than just this fucking bench moment that we've committed to.
Yeah.
Like,
something physical. Yeah.
Because that's it. And the knife being... having to break the fucking knife. Honestly. And be like, it's that there's no going back. I can't just add one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, years down the line, you might think, fuck, I could have, like, written her a poem to keep. Or, like, I don't... Anything. That's it. The only thing that he gets is a tear. And it's like... It's done, it's gone. It evaporates.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So we get the breaking the knife moment and we try with Mrs. Coulter. He remembers the Mrs. Coulter moment, the fact that he thought about his mum and that's what broke the knife last time. Mm. The knife had broken because he thought it had at last meant something it couldn't cut and that was his love for her. So he's talking about his mum. So he tried it now, summoning an image of his mother's face as he'd last seen her, fearful and distracted, in Mrs. Cooper's little hallway. But it didn't work. The knife cut easily through the air and opened into a world where they were having a rainstorm. Heavy drops hurtled through, startling them both.
Can you imagine if it cut back through to Lyra's crying face and then he had to go, oops, sorry.
Oh, God. Can you imagine? Oh, my God, that would be fucking tragic. Like, what would you even do? Just be like, oh, so bye. Oh, God. His demon knew what he should do and simply said, Lyra. Of course. He nodded and with the knife in his right hand, he pressed with his left the spot where her tear still lay on his cheek. And this time, with a wrenching crack, the knife shattered and the blade fell in pieces to the ground to glitter on the stones that were still wet with the rain of another universe.
Like, fine. Mm-hmm. Whatever. We're all fine here.
Yeah,
it's
we're
okay.
Doing really well, actually.
Yeah, it's fine.
So he picks up the piece of the knife, Kayava helps him, and then we get Mary telling him basically what we'd spoken about, that she wants to help him, she wants mm-hmm. him to be friends. She promised Serafina that she promised Lyra that mm-hmm. she would look after him. That's what they were whispering about. Yeah, and it's just so nice.
I love the way she acknowledges it. She's like, look, we've actually not really spoken that much. We're still kind of strangers, but like mm-hmm. we do have this shared experience here. I've made a promise to Lyra. Seraphine has made a promise to you, I'm mm-hmm. sure. Blah, blah, blah. Like, I love that she, again, lays it out so clearly, recognises his autonomy as an adult.
Yeah.
Like, yes.
I do really like the bit where she's like, and if you need somewhere to live, well, if you wouldn't mind living with me, if we can arrange that, then you won't have to go into whatever they call it, into care. And I like that she frames it as like, if you wouldn't mind living with me, like rather than being like, I want to help you and you can come and live with me. And it being this like almost taking away like Will's choice of the matter. Just being like, oh, if you wouldn't mind living with me, then we can make it work kind of thing. It's really
nice.
I
also love that she's like, you can come live with me. It'll be chill. I might be on the run from the
law. Yeah. But we can sort that.
I did trash a lab before I left and like maybe do a... just a mild fraud and destruction of property, but like you're also potentially suspected for murder.
Yeah.
So like we'll figure it out together.
We'll figure it out. So Mary was a friend. He had a friend, it was true. He'd never thought of that. Yes, he said. Well, let's do it. My flat's about half a mile away, and you know what I'd like most of all in this world? I'd like a cup of tea. Come on then, let's go and put the kettle on. Bye, Will. Bye, Mary. Forever.
The fact that the last we see of Mary and Will is Mary saying, let's put the kettle on.
Yeah.
Could a book be more British if it tried? Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. It's perfect. Yeah. That's it. I'm here. Also, I'll make you a cup of tea in this time of crisis person, yeah. Which is why I struggle when you struggle, because you don't like a hot drink.
You're like, what can I make you?
I'll get you a can of Coke, I guess. Yes. I can't just shove a cup of hot tea in your hands and hope for the best.
Yeah.
But I love that that's Mary's, like, she's like, yes, you know. And also, it's that feeling of being a Brit on your holidays, mm-hmm. no access to a good cup of tea.
Yeah.
And you're like, what I want is my own home.
Yeah.
My own mug, mm-hmm. my own kettle. I mean, yeah. like a cup of tea, how I like it.
Yes.
When I get home, and it's like, yes,
yeah.
yes.
I'm with you. I mean, in spirit, because I don't know that feeling, but I know what you mean. It's like when you come home, you want your own bed and your own sofa mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, we jump 3 weeks now. And
sure.
And we're with Lyra, and she is back at Jordan College talking to the master.
Just hark back to the heartbreak immediately. So it's like 3 weeks later, 3 weeks after the moment, Lyra had watched Will's hand closing his world away forever.
Great. Yeah.
She found herself seated once more at the dinner table at Jordan College, where she had first fallen under the spell of Mrs. Coulter.
Great paragraph.
It's like an ending and a beginning.
Yeah. Perfect paragraph, if I've ever seen one, to be honest. So she's with the master, and she's with Dame Hannah Ralph. And this is so interesting, because Lyra... she's grown up. She doesn't have as much of that internalised misogyny. She's very much like, oh, this is weird, because last time I saw Hannah, I thought she was, like, real frumpy. But now I'm like, whoa, she's cool. She's got some information, yeah. and I enjoy it.
I enjoy that, yeah, it's the dismissiveness of, like, a younger teenager
yes.
versus the, like, actual curiosity about grown-ups of, like, an older teenager.
Yeah.
Like, that we're seeing the contrast For sure. of. And, yeah, Dame Hannah Ralph, a name to... pop a pin in.
Yes. Interesting that we're popping a pin in a name in the last chapter of the last book.
Last chapter.
But yeah, pop a pin in that, and we'll maybe unpin it at some point.
Who knows?
Who knows indeed. So this is interesting about the magisterium, isn't it? So it seemed that the power of the church had increased greatly, and that many brutal laws had been passed. So this has all happened while Lyra's been away. But that the power had waned as quickly as it had grown. Upheavals in the magisterium had toppled the zealots and brought more liberal factions into power. The general oblation board had been dissolved, and the consistorial court of discipline was confused and leaderless. It's very interesting to draw the line between, yes, we killed God, and that, and we think that we've, you know, got rid of all the bad in the world, to, well, actually, if you think about it, right down to its bones, the magisterium is essentially a business. It's a government. It's a business. It's whatever you want to call it. It still has to go on. Like, it doesn't just crumble. Like, it's not... we are in a fantasy world, obviously, but feels really good at rooting it in a reality that's like, when you defeat the bad guy, all the other bad things crumble. Like, that's not what it is. It still carries on. Yes, it might be waning a little bit, but it's interesting that it got worse.
You killed the CEO.
Yeah.
There's, like, a whole ass board that was, like, supporting that CEO.
Yeah. And it's interesting that it got worse before it seems to be getting better.
Yeah.
Like, it's still happening. It's still going on. Like, the magisterium is still there.
Mm-hmm. And it sort of mirrors what we know has been happening in the more, like, metaphysical fight that's been occurring, which is that, like, Metatron rallied his forces and brought together an army to fight against Azrael's Republic.
Yeah.
And that's probably mirrored by the Magisterium getting way more intense for a while.
Yeah.
But then the fact that Metatron is now the third wheel in a rom-com that's falling forever.
Yeah.
Like, that probably mirrors the fact that everything... came to a head and sort of crumbled, but also that, yeah, the Metatron's falling forever, but that doesn't mean there aren't other angels that were benefiting from the power structures of that heaven situation.
Because most of the Magisterium probably don't even know what's happened.
No.
Like, it's, like, although it's this huge battle, this huge war, it hasn't reached everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we get this little bit here about the master's manservant cousins. Do we remember him? I don't remember him.
I think it is the guy that Lyra had beef with way back.
But he didn't have a name then. Or maybe he did and I've forgotten it, but I don't remember him being named.
Was it him or was it the... oh, what was the name of the... like, the job role? I think we knew him by not being the master's manservant, but, like, the general... I don't want to say butler, but it's not butler.
I know, I can remember having particular beef with someone.
Yeah. So it's not him that Azrael smacked about the wine, is it?
I don't know.
Oh my god, I love that I started saying it right and I still can't do it now. Yes, the yeah, who pours the Takai that Asriel?
Yeah, I don't
know. Angry at? Is that cousins? It could be.
I don't know, but anyway, we learn that, you know, he's actually, he likes Lyra now.
He's a chill guy.
Yeah, he's chill.
I love that all the rivalries she had with people as kids are like, people are being like, oh yeah, that's not a little kid that we were annoyed by. She's all grown up and actually we have loved her this whole time.
Yeah, for sure.
It's different when someone goes away and comes back. It's like coming back from uni.
Yes.
And finding out that all the teachers that you thought hated you, if you like bump into them in the supermarket when you're back home, they're like, oh my god, what are yes. you doing, oh I'm so happy that you're thriving, etc. And you're like, I thought you hated me, you gave me so many detentions. That's why I've never had a detention in my life.
you're such a baby. So the master and Hannah, they want to know what happened with Lyra, and they say, like, will you tell us? And I really like Lyra's response. So she says, yes, but not all at once. I don't understand some of it, and some makes me shudder and cry still, but I will tell you, I promise, as much as I can. Only you have to promise something too. And they say, they like ask her what it is, and she says, you have to promise to believe me, Lyra said seriously. I know I haven't always told the truth, and I could only survive in some places by telling lies and making up stories. So I know that's what I've been like, and I know you know it, but my true story is too important for me to tell if you're only going to believe half of it. So I promise to tell the truth if you promise to believe it. Which is really lovely. And again, we're putting like a little bookend in how we started with Lyra in that first chapter where she's just spouting shit. Those like first few chapters where she's just spouting a load of shit.
She survived the first book almost entirely on her ability to lie convincingly most of the time.
Yeah. And she's learned so much. I mean, from the Harpies, really, isn't it? Mm. About like how important true stories are. I understand why she said to them, like, it's kind of a bit like, look, Master, I love you, but if you're not going to believe me, I can't waste my time telling you what happened, because what's the point?
It also speaks to that, what you were saying earlier in this episode about the consistent thing in most media of, like, adults not believing young people about consistently, like, supernatural stuff that's going on. Like, nobody is going to believe Buffy when she tells them about the vampires.
Yeah.
But, like, the fact that Lyra is, like, acknowledging that that's a thing is, like, not only do I have a history of lying and I don't want you to accuse me of crying wolf here, but I know that adults have a history of not taking seriously what young people have said. And also she has experience of adults that do take seriously what she's said.
Yeah,
and she's like asking for the same courtesy that she has now experienced from others.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that as well. Being like, look, Mary would believe me. You need to believe me.
Yes.
Like, yes.
Yeah, for sure. I want to read this bit with Lyra and the alethiometer because she gets her moment here to actually really put into words how she feels about it, because we've only had her like being really upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
So she says, but you know the thing I wish, Lyra said, almost more than anything else. I wish I hadn't lost the way of reading the alethiometer. Oh, it was so strange, Master, how it came in the first place and then it just left. One day I knew it so well, I could move up and down the symbol meanings and step from one to another and make all the connections. It was like, she smiled and went on, well, I was like a monkey in the trees, it was so quick. Then suddenly, nothing. None of it made sense. I couldn't even remember anything except just basic meanings, like the anchor means hope and the skull means death. All those thousands of meanings, gone. And I do like that we've given Lyra that moment to actually express how she feels about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess like the whole point of this like last bit with her and the master and Hannah is to like give her a bit of hope to be like, well, you know, Hannah's like, you can come and learn it under, you know, we have a great principal. Like, you can come and even start having private lessons with me before you go to that school, because she's not old enough yet, which I think is lovely. But again, like, I'm still a bit like butthurt about it leaving her, to be honest.
I kind of love that Lyra has kind of gone from being like, oh, I think this lady is frumpy and boring in the first book, to then being like, oh, wait, this woman's area of study is the thing that I have that I've lost.
Yes.
Like, and the fact that she can now be like, I'm here to tell you that information's not lost, Lyra.
Yeah.
I can teach you. And all of a sudden it's like her, Dame Hannah's like life path of being, I'm a scholar that studies alethiometry is now like kind of Lyra's own vision of her future.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I could do.
Yeah.
Which is very cool.
Yeah, for sure. I do like that we get this bit where she talks about that she has to think about her future and she's never had to think about that before. Which is interesting.
She's been surviving till now.
Yeah, she's like, I've got a whole life to live, but no idea what to do with it. It's like having the alethiometer, but no idea how to read it, which is a nice little analogy. And she's just like, I'm lost. Like, I don't have any money. Like, what the fuck? I don't know what to do. And she talks about Yorick, and she talks about Seraphina. She talks, like, should I know Yorick could have me on Svalbard? I could probably go and live with the witches.
She says, I know my parents were probably rich, but I bet they never thought of putting any money aside for me. And anyway, I think they must have used up all their money one way or another by now.
Yeah.
So I probably don't. So even if I did have a claim on it, there wouldn't be any left. I love that she just read them so hard for being bad parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
Being like, I bet they didn't even think of me at all.
I love that, like, the master says, the master saw something else. He saw how the child's unconscious grace had gone and how she was awkward in her growing body. But he loved the girl dearly and he felt half proud and half in awe of the beautiful adult she would be so soon, which is lovely. And also, bang on the money. Like, remember, like, how awkward... I see pictures of myself when I was, like, 12, 13, and I'm, like, this gangly, like, long-limbed thing, and I'm like, God, I was so uncomfortable in my body. Like, I didn't know what the fuck it was or how to use it or, like, how to be in it. And it's just... I get it. Like, you do see teenagers and you're just like... You look like Bambi on ice.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, she's entering her Bambi on ice years.
Yeah, yeah. And then the master lies and says that Asriel left her. And I get why he did, because he wants to give, like, Lyra's just lost everything. He wants to give her some, like, shred of hope about her shitty parents. But he lies and says that Asriel's left her money, when really it's just like, oh, I'm rich and she can have my money kind of thing.
It's simultaneously, you're giving Lyra the kind of dignity of not being a charity case and being like, no, you have family money, you're provided for, don't worry. But also, why are we giving Asriel credit? He's been a shit dad this whole time. She's going to think, oh, well, at least he left money for me.
Yeah.
Like, and like, why not just say, no, Lyra, Jordan College is your family.
Yeah.
We raised you.
Yeah.
We love you.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Jordan, not necessarily the master, but Jordan will provide for you because we are your family.
Yeah.
Like, it's an opportunity to claim her as their family and be like, you will never be wanting because everybody here loves you. You grew up here. We raised you. But it's not that. It's, oh, don't worry. You're not an imposition. I'm going to secretly take care of you. And like, it's a lovely sentiment. But there was an opportunity there for her to have another bubble of like found family
For sure,
that has been missed by crediting Asriel where he doesn't deserve it.
Yeah,
so
yeah 100%. So we learn about this, you know, what we talked about earlier, the like alethiometered course essentially. It's like a boarding school. They talk about like Lyra potentially having like a bunch of like pals, bunch of like girlfriends. I mean, either way, you know. Lyra is at first a little bit like, oh shit, like I don't think I could have that. I don't think I could have girl, like, friends that are girls. I don't think that I want that or need that. And then she kind of like flips around a bit and she's like, oh, actually maybe I could. And I just think it'd be really good for her to have that.
Lyra needs to go to St. Trinian's is what I think.
Yeah.
Because she needs to still be like a bit wild and a bit mad.
Yeah.
And it does worry me that if she's going to like an all girls boarding school, we don't want her to learn to be prim and proper. We want her to like still be absolutely feral. Please.
Yeah,
thank
for
you.
Sure. So her and Pan, they go out into the dark streets and they go back to the Botanic Garden. And they like start to play with the like fact that Pan can go like far away from her, because I feel maybe that's something, not that we've forgotten that, but we haven't seen the reality of that yet, really. Apart, obviously, we know they were trying to find their demons for ages, but we haven't seen them back together using that ability to like go far away from each other. And it's very evident here that they haven't told anyone about that.
Yeah.
So they have to pretend not to when there's people around.
There's a lovely line, which is, once she would have revelled in showing it off to all of her urchin friends and making them goggle with fear, but Willard taught her the value of silence and discretion.
Yeah.
And, like, she's been through a lot. She's learned,
like,
not to stand out because it's scary sometimes. And the fact that she's kind of learned some of that from Will, because he's had to be like that. Ugh,
also, not, like, her reading her friends for filth and calling him urchins.
It's very, referring to her friends as urchins is very book one energy. It's
yes,
very,
definitely.
I am doing that. We haven't had an ent in
so long. I know,
long.
In so long. Wild. They, like, have this little game where, like, Pan tries to surprise her and he can't, and it's all fun and games.
And then they like have a little chat about it, and they like agree that they'll go to the school. And then this is where Lyra wonders about the other pupils. They might be cleverer than she was or more sophisticated, and they were sure to know a lot more than she did about all the things that were important to girls of their age, and she wouldn't be able to tell them a hundredth of the things that she knew. They'd be bound to think she was simple and ignorant. So here we see that it's actually Lyra that's more worried about what they will think of her, whereas like in the past we've had Lyra, again, probably just trying to protect her own feelings by being like, no, I don't want to be with them people because I don't like them, rather than, and now she's like, oh shit, well, what will they think of me?
Yeah, it's the teenage self-consciousness coming in as well.
Yeah, for sure.
She talks about the books and whether it'll, how long it'll take to learn to read them. Like, do we think Dame Hannah can really read the Alethiometer? Do you think Dame Hannah can really read the Alethiometer, said Pan? With the books, I'm sure she can. I wonder how many books there are. I bet we could learn them all and do without. Imagine having to carry a pile of books everywhere, Pan. And like, it's just, again, thinking about the future, thinking like, oh yeah, imagine having to do that. And then, will you ever tell me what you and Will's demon did when you were apart? And Pan says, one day. And she'll tell Will one day, and we agreed that we'd do it when the time had come, but we wouldn't tell either of you till then. And I love that that's just a mystery.
Yeah,
it just remains a mystery.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's written any, I can't remember the themes of the novellas.
No.
I don't think any of them are about that, are they?
I don't think so. No, because there's...
That's a story I want to
Lyra's
read.
Jordan, and then there's Once Upon a Time in the North, and I don't know what Serpentine's like about, but yeah, I don't think so. But
no. I want to read that story. I think it's cute. I love that they're like, we agreed we'd tell you when you were ready. Yeah. Cute. Yes. And again, she finds comfort in that because it's another thing that her and Will have in common, which is like a thing, that a secret they don't know, but the part of them knows, and I love that. Yes.
And then we get, it was comforting to think that she and Will had another thing in common. She wondered whether there would ever come an hour in her life when she didn't think of him, didn't speak to him in her head, didn't relive every moment they'd been together, didn't long for his voice and his hands and his love. She had never dreamed of what it would feel like to love someone so much. Of all the things that had astonished her in her adventures, that was what astonished her the most. She thought the tenderness it left in her heart was like a bruise that would never go away, but she would cherish it forever. Pan slipped down to the bench and curled up on her lap. They were safe together in the dark, she and her demon and their secrets. Somewhere in this sleeping city were the books that would tell her how to read the Alethiometer again, and the kindly and learned woman who was going to teach her, and the girls at the school who knew so much more than she did.
Honestly, again, so beautifully crafted sentences going on here.
It's so interesting to me, because to me, the book could have probably ended there, and that would have been like a really nice, like, last thing.
Yeah. But they kind of carry on. Like, there's a bit more, but I think it's because that would be ending on the character driven sentiment. But I think Phil wanted to end on the overall concept sentiment, which is fine, but it doesn't impact me as much as thinking about like Lyra and what she's got to come and what she's learned about herself along the way.
Same. I do. Right. So we get this thing here about that thing that Will said about what his father had told him, but there was something else. I remember he meant the kingdom was over, the kingdom of heaven. It was all finished. We shouldn't live as if it mattered more than this life in this world, because where we are is always the most important place. And I think that is so important, and something that I think, for me as a very nostalgic person who overthinks, I think I need to remember that more often.
And as a worrier.
Yes. For sure.
Well, for me, as a worrier.
Yeah, sure. No, I'm also a worrier. Yeah. Like, yes, 100%. Like, where you are right now in your life is always the most important place, even if it's not where you want to be or where you thought you'd be. There's only, not to get, like, so philosophical, but there is only the present. That is literally all we have. And I feel, like, I'm not trying to preach this because I am, like, the fucking absolute epitome of someone that just goes against it all the time, because like I just said, I'm a worrier and an overthinker and all that kind of shit, but it really is something that we should all try and remember.
It also speaks to the anti-religious establishmentness of these books as well, of like, what are you doing here, living your life in a way that is just to get into heaven, or wandering around condemning people for the way they're living their lives in the here and now and saying you're going to hell in the future. It's like, who the fuck cares? I'm living here and now.
Yeah.
I'm doing what's right in the here and now, and I'm enjoying myself in the here and now. I don't care about your hypothetical hell or heaven. Yes. I'm doing good right here, right now. Thank you very much. Like, leave it there, yeah, kind of thing. So it applies on like so many levels.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Here for it.
So,
but there was something else. They had to build something, and we get a repeat of this sentiment of what the dust wants from us, mm-hmm, and like what Phil kind of wants every reader to take away from this, mm-hmm, book. So he said we had to build something. That's why we needed our full life pal. That's why we needed our full life pan. We would have gone with Will and Kiava, wouldn't we? And Pan says, yes, of course. And they would have come with us, but then we wouldn't have been able to build it. No one could if they put themselves first. Then we have to be all those difficult things, like cheerful and kind and curious and brave and patient. And we've got to study and think and work hard, all of us, in all our different worlds, and then we'll build. And then a lovely description, and Pan and Lyra sitting together. Her hands were resting on his glossy fur. Somewhere in the garden, a nightingale was singing. Phil loves a nightingale. Mm-hmm. We've referenced them previously, yeah, and the demons have been nightingales, mm-hmm, at times. And a little breeze touched her hair and stirred the leaves overhead. All the different bells of the city chimed, once each, this one high, that one low, some close by, others further off, one cracked and peevish, another grave and sonorous, but agreeing, all in their different voices, what the time was, even if some of them got it a little more slowly than others. In that other Oxford, where she and Will had kissed goodbye, the bells would be chiming too, and a nightingale would be singing, and a little breeze would be stirring the leaves in the botanic garden. And then what? Her demon says sleepily. Build what? The Republic of Heaven, said Lyra. And it's the end of the bloody book!
End of the bloody book.
Yes, I love the description of all the bells ringing at slightly different times, because it brings back to mind the way that all the worlds are starting to get pushed back into alignment as, yeah, well, and how they're slightly off. The fact that the same bells are ringing the same time in Will's world. Mm-hmm. I do hope they have the same daylight savings times.
Yes, that's true. Oh my God, yes.
Like, just lovely. The whole Republic of Heaven thing, great concept. But I do think what Lyra says earlier about what she's learned about, like, love, mm-hmm, and people resonates with me more so than the Republic of Heaven concept.
Yeah, oh, me too.
But I do love the bit about being kind and curious and brave and patient and studying and thinking and working hard. I think that's like,
yeah,
the core of this.
Yeah, and I think like the Republic of Heaven thing, is it more just like a metaphor for like living your life, mm-hmm, well and how you should be living it, yeah, rather than actually having to build something? It's more like, yes, you can't be with Will and Kiava, but maybe you wouldn't be able to, even though it would be beautiful and a lovely relationship, there's so much in that where you couldn't survive in each other's world, so you wouldn't be able to take the time that you needed, mm-hmm, in your own worlds to, like, make your life what it should be, and in turn make other people's lives what they should be and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's an interesting concept, isn't it?
Yeah.
In the back of my book, and I've read through these, and maybe I'll mention it, I think I'll mention it more on the lantern slides, mm-hmm, but I have an archive of the Magisterium papers of Mary Malone.
Ooh.
And it's a lot of her, like, diary entries. I will read one of them for you. I'll read, mm-hmm, the last one. But it does beg the question of how the Magisterium got hold of them, because you'd think that Mary would be quite careful with her stuff. Ooh. So what's happened in that time where the Magisterium's got their hands on Mary's shit?
That's a great question. Yes.
So, she is astonishing, dizzy and wounded and graceful and with sort of a shocked tenderness, all directed towards him. And he is the same, but always that fierce, direct quality. It's hard to look at him without quailing. If anyone makes the slightest movement towards either of them, the other moves at once to protect. They spend every second together. What are they going to do? What are they going to do? Yeah, she just repeats it. Late, and then this is later. It just says later. His mother is ill. Sounds like some kind of depressive, what do they call it, bipolar thing. And he's been looking after her without telling anyone. The fears that without him, she'll be taken into care, sectioned, what is it? And he'll have to go into care or something. No relatives. I can't believe there are no relatives. Actually, if he says it, I believe it. I believe anything from him. He'll need a place to live, a legal guardian or something, and I'll need him. I could help. I could do that. Seems so unjust. No camera, not even a photograph of her for him to have, but he'll never forget.
Yeah, not even a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get
and that's cry. If you remember, that's what Simone said to us when we interviewed her, mm, because she said, and I knew, like, she was like, why wouldn't Mary have a camera? And then I think she said that she read those and she was like, oh, she doesn't have a camera. Mm-hmm. And it was a whole thing of, like, Simone getting ready to play her, at least in season 3, I think. Mm. But yeah, there's a lot more, and
they're all kind of like the same vibe. I think there's some of her like workings out for like the cave and talking to Oliver and stuff like that. But we can talk about them a little bit more on the lantern slides if I remember.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, we'll try. My book just skips straight to the acknowledgements. Mm-hmm. And there's a little quote from the acknowledgements that I really love that I wanted to read out, because I feel like we've referenced a version of this multiple times while talking about everything, mm-hmm. especially with all the snippets at the beginning of these books, all the little quotes that Phil pulls.
Yeah.
And in the acknowledgements, this little bit is... I've stolen ideas from every book I've ever read. My principle in researching for a novel is read like a butterfly, write like a bee. And if this story contains honey, it is entirely because of the quality of the nectar that I found in the work of better writers.
That's so great, isn't
right?
it? Yeah.
I think that's so great, because I think he's referred to himself as a magpie before.
Yeah.
But being like, just outright saying, I've stolen ideas from every single book I've ever read.
Yeah.
We are a product of all of the things we've ever read. I love that. Yes. I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so I don't even get to ask you what the next chapter's called. Oh my God.
The next chapter is called Us Doing a Wrap-Up episode of this whole ass book.
Yes.
That has taken us over a year to record.
Well, every year, right? Mm-hmm. God, wild.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at the end. Do you have an award? I don't know, like... I don't know who I want to give it to, because I feel like everyone kind of deserves it.
Can we give it to Phil?
I was literally just going to say that. Do we give it to Phil?
Should we give Phil an award? The one award that he gets for writing a series that inspired a podcast and inspired so much more than that from a lot of people.
Let's give it to Phil.
We rag on him a lot for making decisions that break our hearts and sometimes are just rude, but he gets an award.
Yeah, let's give it to Phil.
I mean, he's already won plenty for these books.
Yeah. But the one from us, I'm sure, will be the most coveted of them all.
Oh, of course.
He'll cherish it.
Exactly.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's give it to Phil.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Faye. What are we going to do?
I don't know.
It's fine. We're going to do a wrap-up. We're going to do lantern slides.
We've got a few. We've got a few more.
We're not done yet.
I think we can both speak for ourselves and say right now that you will get those episodes. When you'll get them? I don't want to tie us down, do you know what I mean? Because we've been so bad. We will try and get them out in, like, the normal schedule. But if it fails, just know that we will put them out at some point. They're coming.
Considering I hilariously keep making graphics with, like, our winter schedule, it's soon going to be a spring schedule.
Don't make any more graphics. I think it's pointless.
I think the new graphic will just be a big sign that says, over the schedule, you'll get them when you get them.
Yeah. Coming soon is a good vibe to have, I think.
Coming soon to a headphone or speaker near you.
Yeah.
I'm going to eke out what, like, as much of these, like, little bits of this series that we've got left. Like, I'm really going to enjoy doing a wrap up. I'm going to enjoy doing the lantern slides.
Yeah.
I'm going to enjoy the novellas. I'm going to bloody love doing a mailbag.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's so many points that, especially with the mailbag episodes, there's so many points that our listeners have brought up to us that, like, spark, like, so much more conversation and so much more, like, introspection on these books that I am excited to have those chats and I read those things, because it's just lovely chatting with you and doing a podcast with you,
isn't it? Just
let's just keep it going.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, shall we do an outro for the last time in this trilogy?
Yes.
And am I gonna try and
I'm going to challenge you to do it script free for the lols. We've done
I don't know if I can do it. 132? Yeah.
So you should know it by now.
Oh, God. I can't remember
it's
who starts.
It's me that goes first.
Okay.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Her Dark Materials. You can find us on Instagram.
Twitter and Instagram.
You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at HDMPod, and you can email us at her.materialspod@gmail.com, and you can visit us on our website at hdmpod.co.uk. Nailed it.
Yes. If you want to support us, you can become a patron at patreon.com/hdmpod. You can also visit... We also have a shop where you can buy merch featuring all original artwork from Rich. You can find it at hdmpod.co.uk/shop. I'm Faye, and when I'm not ending these books forever...
Oh my gosh.
You can find me on my other podcast, Still Into You. You can... Still Into You.
And you can follow us. Right, I'm going to have a quick glance.
No!
Okay, I won't. But you can, okay. You can find me talking about Paramore on my other podcast, Still Into You. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Still Into You Pod.
Yes. I'm Rachel. And when I'm not here talking to you lovely folks about his Dark Materials, that's it. That's the entire podcast.
Yes.
I am making cute and magical arty things. You can find me over on Instagram at RachMakes, on Twitter and TikTok at Rach_makes, and over on my website, rachmakes.co.uk. A big thanks to everybody that has ever supported this podcast.
Yes.
You mean the world to us.
Yes.
I can't believe that this is the final chapter.
Uh-huh. Yeah, for sure. And we'll see you soon. And yes. Don't forget.
Keep telling stories.
And all will be well.
Oh my God.
We did it. Goodbye. Goodbye, this trilogy. It is done.